Stephen Glaister, Ian Gordon, Anthony Holland, other authors here in the audience, and if there are any questions you want to direct to them about transport or other issues, they're here. Any like contribute questions or just thoughts? Yes, I'm saying you are. I know you have a thing.
I'm Mark Bain from Greenwich Council. I ought to just clarify one small point in Kath's presentation. The one of the agreements mentioned is known as a multi-area agreement.
That's
okay. But it was developed, absolutely right what Kath said, it was developed in the north of the country. Most prominent one is probably the Greater Manchester metropolitan area. So the metropolitan area agreement is...
It's correct in the book.
It's just to correct that point. And the point about the target date for trying to converge with the London average on a range of indicators is certainly not within 5 years. It's more within the 20-year framework.
How have boroughs worked with the Olympic Legacy Company, which is also toiling away on improving London arteries?
Well, there's a number of far too many different committees and bodies and so on, but there is an ongoing working arrangement with the Legacy Company. And they were very heavily involved, as they were being set up, in putting together the strategic regeneration framework so that when it was published and launched, there was effectively a signatory to it, as were the GLA and the CCC.
John, was the announcement last week from the government of resources for the boroughs, which was actually about money for the games itself, I think. Was there anything beyond the games? Was it literally to help the boroughs with the games?
No, I think it is. That announcement was the one Kath referred to, specifically the thing that both five of those boroughs, but also in Tony, I think about 11 boroughs, we've got, choose over those intensive Olympic games time sort of exposure, could get some compensation for the additional costs of their incurred and sort of things that Kath was describing. So the figure is yet to be announced, but at least there is something which is
good. So nobody really knows how much money will be available after the end of the games, it's true. I mean, we know 9 billion up to the games, X after the games, that's sort of where we are, isn't it?
Well, I think. Martin Crooks. I think one of the emerging features of what's going on is a tension between the convergent wish and the wish to make stuff happen within the red line of the Olympic area, the Olympic legacy area. What's happening, I think, is that they will manage to get enough new infrastructure, social infrastructure, school to serve the area within the red line of the post-Olympic legacy plan. What they won't do is add to the stock of schools, services and other facility infrastructure that serves the surrounding areas nearly as much as the original shtick promised. I think what we're going to see is possibly a red line area within which convergence with the west of London occurs, and no evidence around it that that effect has gone across outside the borders into Waltham Forest or Tower Hamlets and so on, because that company's job is to get development away and to market that area.
Dan Bowie, University of Westerns. I'd like to come back to John Ryan's comment, contribution at the beginning about the impact of localism in London, really ask three fairly specific questions. The first, does he and London councils actually support the view of the chief planning officers from the London boroughs who wrote a letter to the chair of the panel of the examination public saying they didn't actually believe, given the localism agenda, there should be any strategic targets for housing output in London at all, and that's a matter to be left to boroughs. Second related question is, what is your view on the weakening of the affordable housing targets in the London plan, effectively not just reducing the overall target, but the weakening of the social rent target, and basically a view that it's very much up to boroughs whether they do any social rent at all. And thirdly, his view on the double devolution, which you mentioned, which is sort of how do you represent the boroughs feel about the government's proposals to actually take planning powers from the boroughs and give them to local residents, effectively to have local residents having a power of veto over what happens in their area
say that in respect of all of that, as you might guess, the 33 authorities with different political complexions, you know, there's quite a range of views. And so, in part, I don't think we're able to see an entirely clear and single voice of all those things, but we'll try to make sure that we represent the different shades, and there will be some that I think will probably, you know, in favour almost be close to the abolition of the strategic plan, it's all right through to those who are much more sympathetic to the objectives that originally set out. But just quickly on the 3 points, I mean, I think that on the last point, I think people are seeking to sort of work with the grain of what the government has said and maybe involved in the planning. But there are concerns and anxieties both about how you retain strategic grip, you know, in terms of local environmental frameworks, and about, you know, specific clauses about what that might mean in terms of you know, individual locations. So I think that there is, you know, a willingness to work with local communities, individuals, groups, but also anxiety about what some of the impacts of that might be. And I think on the other 2 points, I mean, there is, as I said, I think a sort of strong evolutionary instinct, which I think would be a sort of a fairly common view that the changes from 2007 would probably be sort of be too restrictive on boroughs, too prescriptive. So people, I think, did want a loosening of those. Again, it would be difficult to review, to be absolutely blunt about that. But I think that would probably be fair to say that, you know, that becomes most boroughs. How much of that comes off and how quickly, I guess, will vary a bit depending on political views of different boroughs across the piece. But as a general point, you know, people would want less of those targets, and indeed changing in terms of thresholds. So the conversations we've had with GLA since July have, you know, talked about for residential, you know, thresholds going back up to the one before they go to the mayor, you know, they're going down to, you know, 150 from 2007. So I suppose that's the direction of travel. It's hard for me to be precise about, you know, different points.
Any of our colleagues from the GLA who are here want to comment on either the question or John's, which won't be actually the question, I have to put them on the spot. Various GLA luminaries over here on the left of the room.
No, I was talking to Mark.
John.
And John, just on the definition of local.
John Left.
Sorry, John Left, London Plan Team. Definition of localism, we made very clear in the NPRC, which is still running. I mean, this is marvellous to turn out a book on the examination of the public on the damn thing still running. Great. But from certainly from London Plan point of view, we saw localism in London having 3 parts, the neighbourhood, the borough and the city. You know, you think of yourself as being a Londoner, you think of yourself, in that case, being a resident of Greenwich, and other in Blackheath. And it's being able to fuse those 3 things and the sort of empowering interrelationship between the strategic and the local, and this greater emphasis on consensual approaches to things than we had in the past. On the actual detail of the targets, we had a huge debate about this, just to pick up on Mark Edmonds' point. In fact, housing supply side targets took 2 days out of a fortnight in the debate. The rest was concerned with other aspects, not less need. There is, as Duncan has raised, a real issue about social housing, particularly for the short to medium term. And what we've put into the plan is very much predicated on a long-term view, a 20-year horizon. And it's a target, it's something to aim for. There will, we know, be constraints in the short term, particularly on the social housing front. I could babble all night if you want.
Probably not. Well, very good. Thank you.
Nick Banks. I'm not sure whether this is a question for John Lett or John O'Brien.
Feel free to ask a question to anybody about it.
Right. Is there any discussion on transferring forward planning responsibilities from the boroughs to the GLA? I mean, the boroughs have for many years been trying to produce urban planning frameworks, and last time I saw a very large number of them hadn't got anywhere near adoption. It seems to me that the London Plan is an extremely comprehensive document these days, and I suspect it's a lot longer than the founding fathers of the GLA anticipated in the first place. Why not, to save money, transfer to take add a proposals map to the London plan and scrap the LDFs? Because after all, you know, the boroughs without an LDF seem to be carrying on perfectly well without it.
John, I think the simple answer is no, in terms of the conversation is not taking place. And I suspect there is a sort of a sensible discussion about the relationship between the two, but I'm certainly wouldn't sense from boroughs that there is a sort of keenness to sort of go down the route to not perhaps the boroughs and the current boroughs, but that's
sort of guess that. The thing is, I think I'd have guessed that. Thanks, John.
Yes, quite. Yes, Mark.
Okay, just that, sorry, Mark Hyman from GLA, and apologies for missing up the beginning of this. I suppose I want to just pull it out a bit from the plan and the planning. Just, you know, your title is Coping with Austerity, and austerity in London is slightly different than the national picture. That gives us an advantage and a disadvantage at the same time. The key thing about London as an economy is that this is based on a private sector economy in a way in which most of the UK isn't. Some key bits of the UK are very much not a private sector economy, i.e. they're very different. They're very dependent on public sector spending, and this is quite a strong theme in terms of both what the government's trying to do and where the money is likely to go post-CSR in terms of trying to cope with that. So, you know, the big plus, if you like, is we generally do not expect the impacts on London of the kind of fiscal austerity plan which is being put in place to be as great as they are in other parts of the country. And I think, you know, to respond to some of the things that Michael was saying, you know, our core approach, both in the London plan, which I'm not responsible for, the economic development strategy, which I am rather more responsible for, are essentially a growth-oriented, relatively positive, 750,000 more jobs over the next 20 years, etc. So, you know, that's a kind of positive story. I think the potential dangers for London, from what I'm, you know, as the policy gradually emerges from a newish government, is the exact opposite of that. Sort of, London is okay, we don't have to worry about it. You know, the goose will just go on and on laying the golden eggs. And I think for me, from where I sit in terms of, you know, what I have to worry about in my day job, there doesn't seem to be the kind of recognition in government at the moment that London lives or dies as being a globally competitive place. And there are a lot more competitors across the range of potential economic sectors than there were 10 or 20 years ago. The level of competition is higher. You know, there are a number of strengths that London has, but there are also some potential weaknesses as well. So I think, you know, that's the bit of a picture that I just feel kind of isn't there in current government thinking. It seems to be a kind of, you know, the danger is it's a zero sum. What does the North get? What does London get? What does the Mayor get? What does the boroughs get? The you know, that's all an important part of the London story, and it's important to continue to have those conversations, and that changes over time. But that bigger picture seems to be absent. And I think there was a time when government was actually interested in these issues, not just for London, but was interested in the city's agenda as a whole. And they seem to be less so at the moment. And that is a big risk for London.
Can I just add a little comment on that? I think this concern, which is strong in the London plan and in the economic development strategy and in the whole discourse, with a sort of single thread of growth, is really jolly dangerous. Because, you know, the way it ends up, so easily ends up with everybody saying, well, London doesn't suffer as badly as other regions, you've got a lot of lessons to count, we probably survive better, we're very flexible, and so on. It's a bit like a football discussion in which you end up saying, well, at least we are going to be relegated. You know, all be okay. But it won't be okay if people are in the middle of the bottom of the income distribution, which we know is very, very, very severely underrepresented. And its health effects are very bad. And its non-employment effects are very bad. And if we get growth from the top end, top part of the population, jobs and income, this, you know, and cuts the public services and social wage, then we can look forward to, I'm sure we can look forward to a really seriously worsening position. For people in London, basically, who don't have the good fortune to be already owner-occupiers, and don't have the good fortune to be council tenants. And even they're going to be rather screwed by these changes in the rental regime. So,
okay. Liz.
Liz Meek, Government Office North West now, but previously London. I just think it's worth reminding ourselves of the thing that got us rather excited a week ago, was it? The last thing. Although London is, of course, the centre of the universe, we are, it's the capital of a country, and we are a small country, actually, and London is inextricably linked to the other cities and the rest of the country. And perhaps there is a danger in looking too exclusively at any one part of the country. And maybe there's a lack, perhaps it's what Mark was saying, there's a lack of serious investigation of the balance of different parts of the country, because it's become deeply unfashionable, hasn't it, to look at regional policy or what one might do. I have no idea what one might do, but the country is becoming increasingly unbalanced. And there's a question as to whether that's good for any of us, even for the goose that lays the golden egg.
Don't we at City Hall worry about Eastgate becoming unbalanced? John, do you worry about London getting too rich, relatively?
No, I mean, except for the people who are in the
Can I venture both sort of professional planning view and a personal view? From a professional planning view, we are very concerned that London continues to make its net contribution to the national exchequer. The LSE does its own work, which we very much value. It goes up to about net terms, about 20 million a year. Our own GLA economic stuff is a bit more modest. And the mayor, the plan, makes clear that that should be maintained. So to address the point that Mike makes, that we are forgetting the less fortunate, poorer people, we are very concerned not just with Londoners, but also the net contribution that we are helping to address the issues faced by the North West. There is a wider issue, this is a private one, and that's on regional policy. And certainly when I was going through the Growth White Paper and thinking, well, there have been a lot of articles that come out, two contradictory ones from the Policy Exchange, but one of them was actually effectively asking, are we trying to maintain an economic geography of the UK which is predicated on subsidising the legacy of the 19th century? And if you were being really radical in a neoliberal sense, to quote one of the contributors, shouldn't we be thinking that actually the balance is actually not maintaining what's going on in the rest of the country to the way that it has been, but might actually be more oriented towards the southeast? I know that's heresy, and as an officer, I do, of course, count. But as an individual, it's an issue that I've exercised.
It's certainly an interesting analysis that the PTEC, the Passenger Transport Authorities in the rest of the country have done, without doubt shows London's transport funding being preserved more than the rest of the country, at least for the next 2 or 3 years. It drops off a bit thereafter.
With or without Crossrail?
Sorry?
With or without Crossrail?
I think it's with Crossrail. I hope it's with Crossrail, otherwise it'll make it very, very...
In which case, so what?
We need to... I think we finished by 7:30, and I don't want to go on